You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Friday to you. Lots to get to on today's show. Arkansas basketball moving on at the NCAA tournament. We're going to talk to Ethan Westerman and Anthony Christensen from Providence today to talk about last night's win over Kansas and tomorrow's game against St. John's. We'll end the show with Tyler Head. He's a radio commentator from Columbia, South Carolina, about this weekend's Arkansas-South Carolina baseball series at Baum Walker Stadium. But we begin with Ethan Westerman. He's sitting in the arena. Ethan, did you ever leave last night after St. John's in Omaha? Just kind of a pretty crazy day there in Providence. Arkansas winning this game 79-72. Tell us, you know, what did you see?
Yeah, no, I did eventually leave here. It was around 2 a.m. Eastern, and I had not eaten since a few like measly chicken tenders at noon. So I got on Uber Eats because nothing else was really open. I needed somebody to deliver, and a man delivered some food to my hotel on bicycle at 2:30 a.m. So that was crazy. That's just kind of what yesterday was, a weird little fever dream. It was a marathon in here. Started with High Point and Purdue. Ended up with the St. John's Omaha game, and we got some good basketball here. The Arkansas-Kansas game was, I think, if you just even just kind of objectively looked at the slate yesterday, it was one of the more intriguing games of the first round, if not, including today's games too. You have two Hall of Fame coaches, two teams that had wildly underperformed in the regular season compared to what people expected, and you had two teams that, you know, honestly kind of just question mark of how they perform. I thought Arkansas really did a good job first half, kind of keeping pace, because we haven't seen Arkansas just a whole lot this season, just kind of getting that shootout type of game with the team. I know they did with Mississippi State. Missouri kind of took that form too. But Kansas and Arkansas, you know, you went into this game and you didn't think it would be like that because they're two pretty good defensive teams. But they were making shots in the first half. Arkansas was just kind of going blow for blow. Jonas Adu was just a monster yesterday. It's like this late season surge by him. Did anybody see it coming? Because I certainly didn't. He was phenomenal. And then, you know, you get to halftime and you're ahead by 3 points. And it was the second half just took a totally different form. It was back to what you kind of expected of two defensive teams. I believe Arkansas ended up with 28 points in the second half. And seven of them came, you know, in the final 2:55 on that 7-0 run that started with a Boogie Flan steal. It mainly started with KJ Adams going down for Kansas. That was a huge blow for them. It just rattled them, I think. I don't think that they recovered from seeing, you know, one of their best players go out of the game. He ruptured his Achilles. So you hate it for him. And he had just got done, I think, back-to-back buckets to put him ahead by three, 67-64. But Arkansas made the plays down the stretch. Kansas coughed it up a lot. It was like they were putting on a master class, Kansas was, of how to lose at the end without KJ Adams on the floor. Just bad turnovers. Dickinson missed a three that just kind of felt like the, you know, if you don't make that, you don't have a really good chance of winning. I know Rylan Griffin did hit a three that was just a you got to have it. And Arkansas had trouble getting the ball in. But end of the day, they burned a couple timeouts. They ended up, Boogie Flan, they had him on the baseline trying to throw it in. And I just think that's a difficult spot when you haven't been in, those type of situations here recently, his first game back. But they on the third time, they had DJ Wagner throw it to Flan on the baseline, who then got it into John L. Davis and make some free throws. The game's over. It was an entertaining game. It was everything I think you'd want in a first-round game between two teams that, I mean – let's face it, loser feels a lot worse about their season than the winner.
You kind of touched on something that I was thinking about, which was that this did not feel like a typical first-round matchup. I mean, you think about these two teams, there's probably multiple future NBA players on both teams. I think I would be shocked if that were not the case. You don't see this happen in the first round. and a lot of it is because the two teams have, you know, underachieved this year relative to the talent level, the expectations, whatever you want to say. But this felt like a second round type game, and more like something you would see in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I mean, if you pay any attention to you know, preseason polls and kind of what expectations were based on rosters and coaches. I mean, this was supposed to be a Sweet 16 type game. It was a 1 versus 16. That was the preseason rankings, which would mm-hmm. be a Sweet 16 game. It was not your typical first round. And these are two fan bases that, I mean, it's Providence, Rhode Island. This is not an easy trip for a lot of people, but this arena was pretty lively. Both fan bases traveled pretty well. It had that feel in a first round game of a game that could be in further rounds down the road. It was a pretty electric atmosphere, and you know, it's just, I don't know, getting that up close personal view of Calipari and Self. I was sitting right behind the Kansas bench, basically. I could hear every word that Bill Self said yesterday. It was wildly entertaining just hearing how those two were navigating a game of, it was truly a game of runs, just back and forth, kind of blow for blow. And you know, Calipari outdid him at the end. I know that that injury to KJ Adams really hurt Kansas, but you got to give credit to Calipari and his staff for keeping them locked in, and that game could have easily been a loss. But Arkansas generated some offense, frankly, from their defense. Boogie Flan had 3 steals, none more important than that one that went steal to a layup, and then John L. Davis hit that big 3 to kind of cap the run, and you just felt like Arkansas was winning after that shot went in.
You mentioned about the atmosphere there. It's a smaller arena, right? Only about 12,000 seats?
Yeah, it is. It's not big at all. It's kind of, it was a very intimate feeling in here yesterday, just like, because the seats are pretty close too. Like, I mean, pregame warmups, there's fans hollering to the Arkansas players, just Billy, DJ, and they're turning around looking at them and giving them smiles. Like, I mean, you don't see that in a lot of the bigger arenas because you aren't, you know, you just aren't hearing people, but it's right there on top of people. This place was rocking for McNeese and Clemson. It was, and then I wasn't really out here for St. John's Omaha, but I could hear it was pretty loud in here too. There's a lot of St. John's folks here, but, you know, definitely not, I don't think this is a normal first round site, just from what I've seen like other places. This is just a smaller arena, and very much, yeah, you're just right there on top of everything.
All right, we got a couple of sound bites here to play. First off, we're going to hear from John Calipari and what he had to say about the Razorbacks winning this game 79-72 over Kansas. Real quick, Calipari and Self, both of them came into this game last night with 57 wins, which was the most among active college basketball coaches. And so now Calipari has taken a 1-game lead over Bill Self. He's the leading active coach in terms of wins at the NCAA tournament. This is what John Calipari had to say last night about beating the Jayhawks.
We gutted it out. You know, they went zone. We ended up shooting too many jumpers, had to do some different things. They went a little triangle in two also. Screwed us up a little bit, but the kids fought. Nelly makes a shot, makes a couple free throws. Jonas makes free throws. Took us 3 times to get it in. I don't care. We won. If it took us 4, you know what we didn't do? We didn't turn it over. And so it took our 3rd out-of-bounds play to get it in. That's fine. There's stuff we're still learning. We learned some stuff today, didn't we, boys?
Yeah.
We learned some stuff today, and I told them after. So there's stuff going forward that are good for us. This was a good win. That was a NCAA tournament game. 2 teams battling out, making shots, making plays. And we kind of got away from them in the very end. TB was really good. How active is he? Jonas was really good. Nelly made big shots. DJ played well. Boogie for not playing for what? How many months?
3, 4, 5, 6.
Huh? He practiced without. There was no contact. Now, we can't have contact because if someone gets hurt, I'm down to 5. So he practiced, but there was no contact, and he went in and did what he did today.
So that's John Calipari after the win last night. Kind of funny, listen to the players there. It was Jonas Adu and Nelly Davis whenever he asked them about how long did Boogie Flan not play. And I think one of them said, I don't know, 5, 6 months. Ethan, we bring Ethan Westerman back in now. You know, what did you think last night about how Boogie Flan played? You look at his stat line, it was 6 points, 3 assists, 3 steals. And I think probably what surprised most people was the minutes played, because they had said, you know, maybe he only plays 10 to 15 minutes. He ends up playing over half the game, 24 minutes.
No, for sure. That was the big number that jumped out, was he played about 10 minutes over what they had kind of said the cap might be. I thought he played well. I mean, it's a very modest stat line. You're not looking at it and your jaw dropping or anything, but three steals in 24 minutes is really good. That's really good. His defensive intensity really helped him. You know, whenever he went up for that dunk, that AJ Store just, I mean, it looked like he hip checked him, but either way, I mean, huge block, emphatic block. But that was the type of play that at least showed, like, hey, Boogie Fland is not worried about getting hurt out here right now. He's worried about just trying to help out the team, which I don't think you see that a whole lot in today's era of college sports with a guy who his draft stock is up there. But he came back and he's just trying to help the team in March Madness. I thought he, you know, it was rusty. I think that might even be the term that Boogie Fland used himself. It was rusty, but at the end of the day, he helped them out a lot. I was talking in the locker room with some of the guys. I think I asked every single guy in the rotation what they thought about how he played. And Carter Knox said that he feels like Boogie is kind of right now a piece to the puzzle that they just have to have. I think that he makes things happen. That's what I see with him. He's super active with his feet and with his hands. And that's, I think, when you get later in stages of the tournament, you got to create your own offense sometimes. I mean, they're about to go up against a St. John's team that's incredible defensively. Points will probably be hard to come by. You might have to create it yourself. And I think Boogie Fland's the type of guy that can do that.
You talk about being team first and not me first. You know, it seems like Calipari, whether he be at Kentucky, whether it be here, wherever he's been, he gets guys to buy into the team for however long they're there. You know, a lot of them are only there for a year. I don't think any of us expect Boogie Fland to be back next season. You know, whether it be an Anthony Davis or a Karl Anthony Towns or an SGA or whoever, you know, is playing for him, they buy into that team mentality for however long they're with Kentucky. And there's reports this morning that Adu Thiro could potentially play for Arkansas in the St. John's game. We'll see. I think the report from John Rothstein said if he practices today, there's a chance that he might play in the game tomorrow. Based on what I've been told about Thiro, if he plays, he's really gotten this thing out and playing through some pain. And, you know, it's the anti, and whether or not this was right or wrong, there was the narrative a couple of years ago that Nick Smith just didn't want to play because he didn't want to affect his draft stock, that he could have played, but he didn't want to, you know, affect what was potentially in front of him with his knee. What you're seeing from Fland, what you're seeing from, you know, potentially Thiro, even the thought that he might be back, the fact that he's trying to get back to play for this team, it goes against what I think the narrative is for these high-profile players that they don't want to do anything for the team. They want to do everything for themselves. I think what you're seeing from Arkansas right now is maybe a 180 from that.
Yeah, and this is my opinion on it too. I think that between last week's SEC tournament and here in Providence at the NCAA tournament, it's hard to be, if you're kind of borderline where you feel like you could come back and play, it is hard to be here with the team, sitting here and seeing this stage and not wanting to be a part of it. I personally think that these guys, number one, they do want to help the team. Number two, it is, I mean, it reminds me of, you know, whenever I'm a kid and I'm just throwing a fit to my parents that I want to do something and they have other plans and I try and be all pouty, but then we get to the other plans and, you know, you don't sit there for too long and just in a, you know, I'm not trying to compare them to pouting about anything. I'm just saying that it's like at some point you realize that you can still participate and you want to because it is actually, you know, something you want to be a part of. And I think that these guys just ultimately, you get here and you see this and it's something that they've dreamed of. I mean, they dream of the NBA, but they also dream of this stage. And I think that it's hard to sit there and see everything going on and just be like, feeling like maybe if you're borderline of come back and just not be a part of it. I think that they want to step into it. I would be curious if they do have a Adu Thiro come back, if what that would look like, because I don't know. It's hard to sit for that long and then come back and just be thrown right in it. So I'd be curious how they utilize him. But I mean, he was sitting here on the day that they came here with shoot around on a Wednesday, and he was sitting on the bench chucking up shots from the bench. It's like he so bad just wanted to be on the court with the ball. He was doing even off the court with the ball. I think these guys just really have dreamed of this and they want to be a part of it. But it is a team first type of mentality, I think. And these guys, I think I've been interested to see how it would be just as far as whenever a guy sits for a little bit, his interaction with teammates and like involvement with the team. It seems like what they've done this year between, I know, the wins that they would have, they would FaceTime these guys in the locker room. It's like they've tried to include them to be a part of everything still while they've been recovering from whatever their injuries they're going through. So now that they're here and feeling a little bit better, I think they just badly want to be a part of it.
Well, today you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com, most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports with analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories, and all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. Ethan, what's the schedule today in Providence?
Press conferences start with Purdue, I want to say at like 1. Arkansas is going to go at 3, and these are Eastern time, so 2 Central is whenever Arkansas will take the podium here. And I'm excited to see what it's like between Calipari and Patino talking about this matchup that they're about to have, because you know, it's a fun rivalry. And I said this yesterday to somebody. I genuinely do think, well, no, first of all, I think that whenever Calipari says this is like the most rewarding season he's had, or I think that's, you can't deny that you won a national championship. That's the most rewarding. But I do think that based on the past few years that he had at Kentucky, what's going on right now, I think he's having a lot of fun. And I'm just curious to see if that kind of bleeds through today in the news conference. I think that he's going to be, he's soaking up this, all the storylines that's going on, and it's on CBS, which he loves. It's like he's just, I think he's having a great time here in Providence.
Imagine this, if Calipari, and he only needs one more win to get there. If he can get past the first weekend, beat Patino, and Kentucky doesn't make it past this weekend, the gratification that I'm sure he'll never admit it, but I'm sure that there'd be a lot of gratification there if that series of dominoes were to fall for John Calipari this week. Ethan, appreciate you being here.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on.
All right, when we come back, we're gonna have Anthony Christensen on. We're gonna end this segment though playing a soundbite from Calipari last night. It's kind of an extended soundbite, and it kind of speaks to what Ethan was just talking about. He was asked a question by Matt Norlander from CBS Sports just about the experience this year, and he kind of gives you kind of a sneak behind the curtain, and it's some stuff that we've heard him say before, but anyway, it's interesting to hear him say this in the context of winning an NCAA tournament game last night, just what this experience has been like with the Razorbacks.
Every one of us, including me, had doubts, and we all had to convince ourselves we're going to do this. I had a card I read every morning and every night before I went to bed, and it was, I've been blessed throughout my life. Forget basketball. I have been blessed. I'm going to have a great attitude. I'm going to enjoy this journey and grow as a coach from it. I am going to make sure I keep an eye on my players, and let's write our own story. And then in the end, it said, have faith. And I read it in the morning, and I read it when I walk my dog, which I do twice a day. I think he walks me, but I think I walk him, but I think it's the other way. And before I go to bed, I have it with me here. And to keep me in that frame of mind, if I want them in that frame of mind, I got to be in that frame of mind. But here's the tricky thing. How do you hold them accountable? How do you challenge them yet still keep building them up, keep hugging them and keep loving? A lot of individual meetings, a lot of that when they're throwing balls away and missing shots, and keep playing, you're fine. But for all of us, the first battle you have, including us coaches, is with yourself. That's the first battle you have. You can't worry about anybody else. You battle yourself and get yourself in the right frame of mind. And I didn't want the albatross around my neck of my history of coaching. Like, you're supposed to win every game. No. No, you're not. Your job is to be about those kids. And wherever the program is at that time, your job is to keep picking them up and make them better and make them feel good about themselves. So I did. There are times I'm like on my office wall, be at peace. Where we are, be at peace. Don't worry about what I've done in the past. It doesn't have any bearing on right now. What I've done in the NCAA tournament, they're talking about wins. It doesn't matter. Final fours and national title, none of it matters. It's this team, trying to get us better. But it doesn't work unless you have good guys. And we have a bunch of good guys. DJ Wagner's one of the nicest young men, and so is Jonas. I told his mother, he's one of the nicest kids I've ever coached. Jonell, with what he went through. Billy and Carter, how hard I've been on those freshmen. I mean, but there's a juggling, because if I knocked them through the crack, now we got four guys. Hard to play.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. Anthony Christensen joins us now. He's not at the arena, but I know he'll be there soon. So Arkansas is going to play St. John's tomorrow. It's going to be a 1:40 p.m. Central tip-off, 2:40 there in Providence, and this is going to be televised by CBS. I guess I'm a little surprised that they didn't put this a little bit later in the day, but you know, you watch March Madness, and everybody's watching. It doesn't matter if it's at 11 o'clock or 1:30 or 5 or whenever. It seems like it's just one of those things that stays on the entire day. And so CBS is going to televise this. It'll be the second game of the day there in Providence. Providence actually going to have the real early game tomorrow as well between McNeese and Purdue. I know you were there last night, Anthony, watching St. John's beat Omaha 83-53. Omaha got up 7-0, and then, you know, Louisville, they just kind of looked like a boa constrictor. They just, you know, slowly took the life out of Chris Crutchfield's team. You could see, I thought, in that game last night, what everybody's talking about in terms of St. John's and the defense that they play.
No, I mean, they're rated the number one defense on KenPom for a reason, right? I mean, the way they just shut down teams and their looks is just, it's impressive. I mean, it's just kind of something Rick Pitino has kind of always done. He's always had good defensive teams. He's won national titles with good defensive teams, and he's got another very good one at St. John's. And he was not happy with how the first half was played, just with, you know, obviously Omaha jumping out to the 7-0 lead and it being a close game going into halftime. But you could see just in that second half just how they switched things and just completely shut out Omaha and just didn't even give them any semblance of a chance. I mean, their rebounding was impressive. Their defense, just the way they guard and keep teams on the perimeter and kind of prevent them from getting good looks and forcing them into late shot clock opportunities. It's just impressive to see, especially when you're sitting there in person and seeing it in person for the first time. I mean, they're very good defensively.
Lewis, RJ Lewis, what did you think about seeing him in person?
He's good. Yeah, that's the theme of the day. With St. John's is good, and RJ Lewis is very good. I mean, Big East Player of the Year for a reason. I voted for him on my my All-American ballot as well. I mean, he's a slasher, man. He's good on both ends of the floor, really good in your face defender, and he's an athlete who can get to the basket. Obviously, St. John's isn't the greatest 3-point shooting team in the world, which is, you know, what Omaha wanted to try to force them into doing last night, which I think, I don't remember the stats just off the top of my head, but I think St. John's did have a better than typical 3-point shooting night. But I mean, he's really good. I mean, Arkansas is going to need to find some way to defend him. Maybe that's a due Thero now that we're hearing that he, quote unquote, might be available to play per John Rothstein. But it's going to be an intriguing matchup because he's quick, you know, especially for somebody of his size. He's fast, and you know, he's really good with the ball in his hands. He's a good passer. He's a good dribbler. He's a good slasher. He gets to the basket with relative ease. So, I mean, he's, like I said, he's an all-around player for sure.
Pitino said something after the game last night. He was being interviewed on the court on CBS after the game ended. He was not happy with St. John's rebounding. He said if we rebound like that against Arkansas, you know, he's got that Boston, that thick New England accent still. He said that they're going to get beat by 30 if they don't block out against Arkansas in this game tomorrow. Of course, the storyline is that John Calipari and Rick Pitino are going to be coaching against each other again. They've coached against each other 23 times in their careers. This will be the fourth time that they coach against each other at the NCAA tournament. 1996 was the first time. Pitino's Kentucky team beat Cal's UMass team at the Final Four in East Rutherford. Fast forward to 2012 when Calipari's Kentucky team won the national championship. They beat Louisville in the Final Four that year in New Orleans, 2014. Kentucky goes back to the title game, and Calipari's team, a little bit of an upset, I think, beating Louisville in the Sweet 16, 74-69 in Indianapolis. So, a lot of history between these two, whether it be NCAA tournament. A lot of people think about Louisville, Kentucky. But even before that, when John Calipari was at Memphis and Rick Pitino was at Louisville, that was before Louisville had joined the ACC. And these teams were, and these coaches were fighting for superiority each year in the Conference USA. A lot of history there between John Calipari and Rick Pitino. Calipari asked last night about seeing John Calipari, I'm sorry, Pitino asked last night after the St. John's game about seeing John Calipari again in round two, and this is what he had to say.
Different teams, different leagues. You said yesterday that Jim Calhoun was the only person you'd consider a rival. What do you consider John Calipari?
I'm talking about disliking each other.
Understandable.
Rival, yeah.
Well, at this point, what would you consider giving?
The only time that John, he was at Kentucky, he was at Louisville. It's normal. So I've always had great respect for John. I've always had I told our team, we have not seen this type of size and this type of athleticism all year. We have not seen that. Creighton has a 7'2 center, but they have multiple guys. Athleticism-wise, we haven't seen this year. So we know what we're up against, obviously. They had a lot of injuries. That's why they opened up 0-5. But they got it together right now. And if they, I don't know where they finished in the SEC. 8th and 9th in the SEC. But if they finished 8th and 9th, what I watched today, I'm glad we're not in the SEC because that's the talent level in that conference is amazing to me.
Is that a chess match you enjoy, the planning to go against each other, given how many times it's happened?
I don't go against coaches. We go against teams. He doesn't have to worry about me. My jump shot's long gone. So he's got to prepare for our team. We've got to prepare for his players. He's preparing for our players. So we... John and I don't play one-on-one anymore.
Wouldn't it be something if they did, though? If you could have Arkansas or John Calipari and Rick Pitino maybe playing a little one-on-one game on Saturday up there in Providence. This is what the network, this is what the NCAA, what they wanted. You cannot convince me, Anthony, that these matchups are not put together with this in mind. I guess there's a little bit of what you call it, plausible deniability when they said it in the second round, but this is what I think, that whether it be the CBS exec, whoever puts together this schedule, and I don't know what the network influence they have, if any, but at least from the NCAA standpoint, you know, and they want to give their networks good ratings and good matchups and storylines and whatnot. You cannot convince me that this is not what they really hoped in the back of their mind to see in the second round, this Calipari-Pitino matchup. It's the talk of the day, and we've got 16 first-round games to play today. This is the storyline in college basketball.
Yeah, no, and it's going to be fun, right? I mean, they're two, you know, high-level teams, especially you look at, you know, Arkansas's won, what is it? I think it's, I don't even remember. Arkansas is in a good run of form is what I'm trying to say. And mm-hmm. Obviously St. John's has won 10 games in a row and is playing as well as anybody in the country. So it's going to be fun just beyond even just the John Calipari, Rick Pitino angle of it. I think you've got two teams that are filled with high level players, guys who can play at that next level. And it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be a St. John's home game, given how close we are to Queens here in Providence. But yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. And you know, I know that, you know, John Calipari and Rick Pitino, I mean, they've clashed quite a bit in the past, and you know, it's fun to get a matchup like that in any setting, especially in an NCAA tournament. I mean, you even look at, you know, John Calipari versus Bill Self, how much hype that got, and that was just a first round game. So this being a second round game for a chance to go to San Francisco next weekend, it just kind of adds to the flavor, if you will, adds to the excitement. And I'm not privy to television plans or ratings or hopes, but I'm sure they're certainly not upset by what happened. By how things kind of transpired to get this matchup.
I think they're thrilled. I think they're absolutely thrilled. This is the,
I think they'd also be thrilled if they did do a little 1v1 between John Calipari and Rick Pitino. Yeah, I would watch.
Put that on Paramount Plus. Get a few subscriptions there. There's a little bit of a tie here between Arkansas and St. John's, and the fact that Mike Anderson was at St. John's a couple of years ago. He landed there after he got let go at Arkansas in 2019. Of course, Mike had the legal issue with St. John's when they didn't want to give him his buyout money. I believe they've settled that, but kind of another interesting little angle there. You got the Mike Anderson tie with both of these teams, with both of these coaches. Anderson, when he was at UAB, he was in the Conference USA, and he was facing Memphis, and he was facing Louisville every year, facing these two coaches, you know, obviously when they were at the top of their game. Not to say they're not at the top of their game right now, but they were really at the top of their game whenever they were having those battles in the Conference USA. Third time that Arkansas and St. John's will meet in the NCAA tournament. St. John's won in 1985 when Chris Mullen played there. He scored 26 points, and that was without a three-point line. Imagine what Chris Mullen could have done with a three-point line when he played in college. And then Arkansas in 1993 beat St. John's in the second round in Winston-Salem and eventually lost to North Carolina in the Sweet 16 that year. But you know, we talk about these little ties. It still is a very unique matchup to see Arkansas and St. John's, Anthony. I mean, 1993, that was the last time they played. The only two times they played is because of the NCAA tournament. I think that's what I like about the tournament, is that it gives you these games and these matchups that you might not be able to think of for yourself, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, and that's just part of the fun, right? I mean, I've been just kind of just watching the tournament for all these years, and you get some fun matchups. Like when is McNeese ever going to play Clemson, right? Like, and given
can I interject? That was the one upset that I felt most confident about in the bracket that I felt filled out, was McNeese over Clemson. I guess it got a little hairy right there at the very end, but McNeese ends up holding on. And then the other one that I felt most confident about, Anthony, was Drake over Missouri, and that one happened. Now, I'm not confident in anything else, but I felt pretty confident in those two, and so I guess a little pat on my back here that I got those two right. And a lot of that, no, hey, I will say, a lot of that is because I've been listening to you and your mid-major rants all year.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I mean, I've been selling Ben McCollum propaganda for 3-4 years now, and I guess now that he's beaten my alma mater, it's kind of like I've won, but at what cost? So that is that. But no, and I mean, that's another matchup. Like, when are you going to see Drake get a shot at Missouri? Because I mean, a lot of these power conference teams, they just refuse to schedule those high level mid majors. And then you get matchups like this. I mean, St. John's versus Arkansas, it's not a matchup you're probably going to see very often in any regular season, which is evidenced by the fact that they haven't played since, I think it's 1993, mm-hmm. before I was alive. So that was, you know, that's fun. You know, it's going to be, there's a lot of fun matchups that come up in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, this is certainly one of them, just even beyond the coaching matchup of it. I mean, it's just, you know, it's New York City against Northwest Arkansas. It's a fun little dichotomy there. And Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's two great teams going at it, and I'm looking forward to being there in the building for sure.
Queens and Fayetteville, who could confuse the two? I will say this too. Trevin Brazil, I've been very hard on him all year, but I got to tell you, the last handful of games when they've needed him, he has really stepped up. Jonas Adu, I mean, now we're seeing, I think it's safe to say that Jonas Adu is back. I mean, what we're seeing from him is elite level interior post play. You think about what Hunter Dickinson did to him at the Maui Invitational last year, and it wasn't just him. I mean, it was to Tennessee in general. But Adu was the one who was, you know, assigned to him for a lot of that game in Maui, 17 points and 20 rebounds. In Kansas last night, Anthony, it was clear, you know, we talked about this yesterday. I said, if I'm Bill Self, I'm telling my guards to get in into Hunter Dickinson every time down the floor, about every 4 out of 5 times down the floor, and let him take it right at these post players and see if they can defend him without fouling. And Brazil gets in foul trouble. Vesic gets in foul trouble. Adu is able to stay out of foul trouble and play 39 minutes last night. Brazil, once he gets back into the game in the second half, the game began to change, you know, in Arkansas's favor. The post play that Arkansas has gotten here over the last 3-4 weeks, in when Boogie Flan goes down and Adu Thero goes down, it's kind of like they've remade themselves a little bit. You know, their image has been remade a little bit. I can't be more impressed with the way these two have played.
Yeah, I mean, Jonas Adu, I remember I asked him about going up against Hunter Dickinson again last night, and you know, he was just very just personal about it, just like, yeah, you know, I used that experience, made it personal, and just did what I needed to do to help the team win. But I mean, you look back at that Tennessee Kansas game, and Hunter Dickinson was he was all over the place. He was very impressive in that game, and I think I noted it in my story last night, or I certainly tweeted about it, just like, this is the matchup that Arkansas wants, and this is what happened the last time it happened. But Jonas Adu was really good, and I'm on both ends of the floor as well. Hunter Dickinson was inefficient. He couldn't get anything going against him, and Jonas Adu was, I mean, he was spectacular throughout the whole game. I think he had a season high 22 for Arkansas, and just everything that went to Jonas Adu seemed to be good. So that was that. And Trevin Brazil, I think it's three double doubles in 4 games, or is it 4 and 5? It's something like that. Just the way he's kind of come into his own since Adu Thero went down, and since he stepped into that starting role, has been really impressive to see. Obviously, he's, you know, he's just from an athletic standpoint, he's, you know, he's up there with the best of the best there are. And just to see him kind of, I mean, gain the confidence to have, like, to put these performances in, and then just to see how he's affected Arkansas. I mean, if Trevin Brazil doesn't go on this run of form, Arkansas is probably not in this tournament right now, right? I mean, you look at, you know, where Arkansas was just kind of standing or sitting there on the bubble when Adu Thero went down. If Trevin Brazil doesn't step into that starting role and have the impact that he's had, you know, you could very easily see Arkansas in the NIT or not playing at all, because I kind of doubt they would accept the NIT invitation. But that's just kind of where things stand. I think those two have been immense in Arkansas successively.
Real quick, on the SEC in this tournament, of course, Texas lost to Xavier a couple of nights ago. Longhorns are moving on from Rodney Terry. There's a lot of talk right now about, will the Longhorns go try to pull off an Arkansas Calipari type deal with Bill Self, who's obviously not in the best of graces with the Kansas fan base right now. I don't know if they can do it. They certainly have the money to do it. I don't know if that's the direction they'll go, but that's what the talk is right now, at least some that I've heard. Net positive day for the SEC yesterday. Auburn beat Alabama State. Tennessee over Wofford. Arkansas obviously over KU. A&M beat Yale. Missouri lost to Drake. And the other loss for the SEC yesterday, not a surprise at all, but Georgia didn't look very good at all in playing Gonzaga. Lost by 21 in that game. Today, ton of SEC matchups. You got Baylor, Mississippi State this morning. Alabama, Robert Morris. Vanderbilt against St. Mary's. North Carolina, Ole Miss, which I think could be maybe the day of the game in the NCAA tournament. I'm really looking forward to that matchup. Norfolk State, Florida, Troy, and Kentucky tonight. OU and UConn tonight, which could be another really good matchup. It'll be interesting to see how the SEC does today. There, I know there's a lot of eyes on whether or not 14 was too many, Anthony. And I guess to this point, 4-3, that's probably a pretty good showing. Today's really going to be, though, you know, with half of the teams playing today, this is going to tell us a lot about, you know, the SEC and maybe how this tournament goes.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, a lot of it is, you know, like you mentioned, Alabama against Robert Morris. I would be stunned to see Robert Morris get that win. Full respect to Andy Toole and the job he's done there. Robert Morris has had a really great season and everything, but I wouldn't expect him to beat Alabama. I mean, some of those, you know, power conference against power conference games are going to be interesting to see. You know, Baylor against Mississippi State is going to be an interesting matchup because I think from an athleticism standpoint, I think you would think Baylor probably has the edge there. But I mean, we've seen Mississippi State beat teams of Baylor's quality throughout the season. And I'm intrigued to see how Baylor does. Vijay Edgecombe is going to be really important in that one. And then you get, you know, Ole Miss going against a North Carolina team that is really hot at the moment. I think North Carolina's won 11 of 12 games or something like that. And obviously just destroyed San Diego State, but North Carolina's obviously really struggled against the field. I think North Carolina entered the tournament with two wins against the field, and one of them was against American, which lost to Mount St. Mary's in the first four. So it'll be interesting to see how does North Carolina handle playing against, you know, another team in the field. Obviously, really impressive performance against San Diego State the other night, but you know, how does Ole Miss kind of approach it? I mean, RJ Davis is going to be, you know, ready to go. Ian Jackson, all those guys. That'll be a fun one to watch. And, you know, I don't have all the games in front of me, but UConn, Oklahoma, you know, UConn kind of flying under the radar because they're obviously not as good as the last two UConn teams, but mm-hmm. still, obviously, Dan Hurley is, in his mind, the best effing coach in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you win two, you know, consecutive national titles, it's going to be hard to argue against that. But you know, that's still a UConn team that has quality. Obviously, Tyrus Reed, Alex Caravan, all those guys, really impressive. So it'll be interesting to see how Oklahoma approaches that. And you know, there's a lot of interesting matchups in this one. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, these SEC teams perform. You know, and it's been an interesting thing to watch for sure so far. Obviously, Xavier, Texas threw that game away. Obviously, we know what's going on there with the coaching search that is, I think, pending. I don't think they've officially announced that they're moving on from Rodney Terry just yet, but all signs point to that. Xavier, really impressive turnaround in that game as well. Nothing was going their way in the first half, and just really got things going. Yeah, and I think Missouri kind of got the wrong end of the stick with a extraordinarily underseeded Drake team. I think you could have made an argument that Drake should have been on the 8 or 9 line, and the fact that Drake wouldn't have got in without winning the Missouri Valley title is frankly ridiculous, and the committee should be ashamed of themselves. But I've kind of gotten off on a tangent here, but it'll be an interesting day to see, you know, how these SEC teams do for sure.
Troy, Kentucky. That's one I'm looking forward to tonight. Troy, Arkansas beat him by 16, but a lot of people forget that game was a 3-point game at the under 12 minute timeout, and Arkansas pulled away there at the end at Bud Walton Arena back in November.
It's an interesting stylistic matchup because Troy can really really slow the game down. Scott Cross has done a really good job there. He's probably one of the more underrated coaches in the country. I mean, you look at that Troy team. I mean, it's not a team that has, you know, outstanding resources or anything like that. And I mean, they play a way that they can slow a team down and really kind of murky the waters a little bit like what Arkansas was doing, you know, when Boogie Flan first mm-hmm. got injured. Kind of did that against Georgia and tried to do that against Oklahoma before kind of going through a little bit of an identity crisis, or not crisis, but change. But yeah, that'll be an interesting stylistic matchup for sure that I'm looking forward to. But I would think Kentucky has enough to win that game.
And there's, you know, there's pressure on every coach and every team to win. There's going to be a lot of pressure on Mark Pope and Kentucky not to have a repeat of what happened against Oakland last year in another 3-14 game tonight. So very interested to see how that one plays out. Anthony, appreciate you being here. When we come back, Tyler Head from 107.5 The Game in Columbia will talk to us about this Arkansas-South Carolina baseball series this weekend at Baum Walker Stadium. But first, another word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. Arkansas, South Carolina tonight at Baum Walker Stadium. It's going to be a 6:30 first pitch for game one. The Razorbacks come into this one with a 20-2 overall record, ranked number 3 nationally. Of course, they won their series last week at Ole Miss. South Carolina, 17-5 under their first-year coach, Paul Maneri. They're 1-2 in SEC play. Had a real competitive series with Oklahoma last week. They split the first two games, and then South Carolina lost 6-5 in 10 innings in the finale in Columbia. Going to be the first true weekend series for South Carolina this year. They've had a couple of midweek games on the road. They do this deal with Clemson where they play once at each other's home ballpark, and then they play once at a minor league ballpark there in South Carolina. Paul Maneri and Dave Van Horn, they've been in opposing dugouts a number of times. Tonight will be the 52nd game all time between Van Horn and Maneri, who was a 15-year coach at LSU. We bring in Tyler Head now. He is from 107.5 The Game in Columbia, South Carolina, to talk about this series. Tyler, we appreciate you being here. What have you seen from South Carolina in year one under Paul Maneri?
Well, first of all, appreciate you having me on here. There's almost kind of a renewed energy around this program. And, you know, not to knock on Coach Kingston, but it felt like there was a lot of apathy with this fan base over the last couple of years. And I've been covering this team for the past handful of years myself. And I knew the history of South Carolina coming in here, all the accomplished under Ray Tanner back in the day. It just didn't really feel like people believed that was possible here after a few years with Coach Kingston. And obviously they made the Super 2 years ago and ended up falling to Florida and then got bounced in the regional at NC State last year. And there just wasn't a ton of excitement around this program. Kingston gets, bumped the next day, and we end up Paul Maneri a few days later to the surprise of a lot of people, but kind of a renewed energy. Obviously, Paul Maneri's been there and done that before, winning the national championship and taking a ton of LSU teams to Omaha, which is exactly what these people wanted to hear. And yeah, playing the better teams in Clemson and Oklahoma hasn't exactly gone the way that South Carolina has wanted it to, but there's a difference between getting run ruled and losing games tight at the very end. And as crushing as last Sunday's loss was, where they had a 2-run lead going into the top of the ninth, you were there. You were in that game, and if you correct a few mistakes, you walk away with the win and a series victory. So they're not far off, a few things to improve on here and there, but this team is certainly talented, and you obviously feel like you have the right coach in Paul Maneri that can get this program back to where it feels like it belongs in deep runs in the postseason.
The SEC is unforgiving. I mean, what happened to South Carolina last week against OU, very similar to what Arkansas did against Ole Miss, where they're down to their last strike, and then all of a sudden they score 4 runs with 2 outs, and they win that game. You and I were talking earlier this morning. It reminds me what South Carolina has done with Paul Maneri of what Arkansas did with John Calipari. You got a program that obviously is starved for success, has won national championships in the past, has fans that think that they should be in the national conversation. And, you know, with Arkansas, they go get Calipari away from Kentucky. That's a little bit different than what happened with South Carolina and Maneri, because, you know, he'd been sitting out. Everybody thought he was done coaching college baseball. And but still, it was, like you said, it was a very surprising move, for them to get him. And I told you this morning, Maneri's 67. John Calipari is 66. 10 years ago, I don't think you would have seen ADs pull the trigger on coaches at that age. But so much has changed now, because it's not about building a program anymore 4 or 5 years and then getting to that point and trying to sustain it. It's all about winning right now. It's a lot more professionalized than college sports used to be. And, it's just fascinating to me that you've got a 67-year-old Paul Maneri who seems renewed and refreshed and re-energized after a few years off, being able to take over this kind of program when you just would not have seen that in the past.
Yeah, look, it came out of left field for all of us as well. And the funny story about it is, of course, Ray Tanner was the AD when this hire was made last summer. He just recently didn't retire, but he stepped into a smaller role. Jeremiah Donati took over at the beginning of the year. But according to Ray Tanner, in the process of looking through several different candidates, he reached out to Paul Menieri to ask him about somebody that he was considering. And over the course of those guys talking for roughly an hour or so, they kind of, I guess, came to the conclusion like, well, hey, why don't you just go ahead and do this? And lo and behold, he ends up getting hired for the job. So I agree with you. That's something that is newer in this realm of college sports with NIL and being able to turn rosters over one year after the next. And, you know, Menieri had his back problems, which is what led to him ultimately stepping away at LSU a couple years ago, which those seem to have been alleviating. He seems to be in good health as of right now. But I think everybody kind of goes into this knowing, yeah, he's probably not going to be your skipper in 2034 or 2035. It'd be great if he was. That means you're having a lot of success. But it's definitely a short-term thing. They've even, when Menieri was hired last year, to the surprise of a lot of people, he even floated out there the idea that Monty Lee, the assistant coach and former head coach at a couple of different places, could end up taking over in a couple of years and just kind of be a transition into him taking over, moving this thing forward. So again, I don't really know what the end goal with all this is. I think you bring in a veteran guy like him to get this program back on track and kind of show you what it means to win again and how to win again and kind of go from there. So again, there's no set date in place on when he's going to step away or what he's trying to accomplish by then. But again, you put your faith in him being that he's done this before and built a lot of good programs, taken a lot of teams really far in the postseason, that he can hopefully do that with South Carolina as well.
The Menieri Tanner angle sounds a lot like Juracek and Calipari, where Juracek said that he went to Calipari to gauge his interest on other candidates and said, why don't you just take the job? It's kind of the more we talk about this, the more parallels it seems like there are between Razorback basketball and Gamecock baseball. I want to ask you about Brandon Stone, who we're going to see pitch tonight, right-hander for South Carolina, sophomore. He was a JUCO All-American last season, not far from here at Johnson County Community College. That's where Brady Slavens came from for the Razorbacks. Stone grew up in the Kansas City area. I'm sure he knows a lot of the Razorbacks because they recruit that area so hard. 1-1, 3.42 ERA for Brandon Stone. What have you seen from him this year?
He's come in and really been lights out when it came to his role in the bullpen through those first handful of games. And Matthew Becker, who was the usual Friday starter, had scuffled in his last couple of outings. And essentially, Stone was asked to come in and pitch almost starter-level innings by going 4 and 5 innings in the past couple games. And it kind of made sense. Like, okay, well, he's already throwing more than the starter anyway. Why not slide him into that starter role and put Becker, who they kind of view as kind of a hybrid guy, in a bullpen role and with the opportunity to maybe earn a start back a little bit later on in the season. But Stone was phenomenal coming out of the bullpen. And last week against Oklahoma, and Menieri's brought this up several times this week because I can tell how much it's bothering him. Apparently, they did not allow Brandon Stone to get his normal allotment of pitches off before the game started. They have a little clock out there, and you're supposed to be able to throw a certain number of pitches before you face the first batter, and they apparently started the clock too early. He only got off a handful of pitches and couldn't really settle in. And when you kind of look at his numbers from last week, obviously they really pop out at you that he got rocked. But when you look at after the first inning, so take away all the hits in the first inning, the 4 runs he only allowed 3 hits and 1 run through the final 4 innings, that being a solo home run. So once he got settled in, he was fine. And again, I don't think Menieri's trying to make that as an excuse, but certainly you can see that he was not quite ready to go off the jump, and Oklahoma was able to take advantage of that. So hopefully tonight, if he gets his full allotment of pitches, he's going to be okay and going to be settled in, because he's really shown to be the best pitcher on this staff through the short part of the season so far.
I wanted to ask you about Nathan Hall and what he's added to the lineup. Transfer from Clemson. He's from right there in your backyard, Lexington, South Carolina. 398 hitter. What has he added to this lineup? What's made him so successful early?
He's giving you exactly what you want out of a leadoff hitter, somebody that can get on base and get around and come around to score as well. And he's a guy transferring over from Clemson that, you know, in talking to people, reading the reports about him, when he got his opportunities last year with the Tigers, he showed a lot of potential. It's just, as you know, that's a very talented Tigers team that, you know, just because you're talented doesn't mean you're going to get on the field each and every day. So he came to South Carolina seeking an opportunity to seemingly get more playing time, was thrust right into that start, that leadoff role there at the top of the lineup, and has done a phenomenal job. And he is about as consistent as can be. I would put him right there behind Ethan Petrie as you know, the best hitter on the team so far this year. And again, we have a leadoff guy that can get on and guys behind him that can move him around the base pass. That's exactly what you want in somebody in that role. And he has been he's been phenomenal so far, in my opinion.
Okay, so I want to ask you about Petrie. He's a great hitter, and we know he's going to be a first round draft pick this year. .341 career hitter, over 1,100 OPS for his career. Against Arkansas, I'm going to read these stats to you, Tyler. 2-for-28 with 17 strikeouts. I mean, this is kind of, and for it to happen maybe one series, it's like, okay, he had a bad weekend. This has happened in Columbia in Fayetteville in 23, Columbia last year, and then probably his worst game against Arkansas was in Hoover last year at the SEC tournament. How do you explain a guy being that good all the other times and then being that bad against one opponent?
It's really weird why specifically against Arkansas, I don't know. He's been, for last season specifically, very feast or famine. If he wasn't hitting a home run, it felt like he was striking out. I think he's been a little bit better at the plate so far this season. So it's just having that plate discipline, which is something that Paul Maneri has come in and preached a lot to the South Carolina program, is just being better at the plate, you know, taking your pitches, not swinging at bad stuff, which, again, when you're a guy that Ethan Petrie's probably been the best baseball player on the field his entire life before he got to South Carolina. And again, the home runs and stuff, you know, certainly back that up for what he's done here, but being a little bit smarter at the plate and not taking bad pitches and striking out at a high clip is something that I think he wanted to work on this offseason, which so far he's done a pretty good job of that. And again, I didn't know those specific numbers against Arkansas, but that is something pretty glaring that hopefully he can correct this weekend. But I don't know why one specific opponent's got him like that, but he's hit off some really good pitchers. I mean, we talk about his defining moment being homering off of Paul Skenes a couple of seasons ago, which that's a very hard thing to do. So it's not the quality of opponent or pitcher that they gives him a problem, but that's something unique you're able to dig up there for sure.
Availability report came out last night for Arkansas. Gage Woods still out. That's no surprise. Dave Van Horn talked about that earlier this week with the shoulder. Rocco Pepi is listed on here as probable. Don't know what's going on there. Same with Parker Coyle, who's listed as probable. Logan Maxwell, who's been dealing with a hamstring, is listed as probable. For Carolina, Tyler, Talmadge Lecroy listed as probable. Gavin Braylon, Kennedy Jones, and then I want to ask you about Nolan. Is it Naraki, who's listed as out for this series? What's going on with him? Because he was playing up until the last couple of weeks, right?
So really, it was more about Jordan Kerryon taking his spot at second base. Kerryon transferring in from Florida State a couple of seasons ago, had an eligibility problem that didn't allow him to play last year. But Naraki was making some mistakes in the field, and Kerryon came in and really provided you exactly what you needed at second base, not only with his glove, but also in the lineup, as he's hit the ball extremely well. So I can't remember exactly what the injury with Naraki is, but he's more been in line with kind of losing his spot on the field as opposed to being out because of injury. Lecroy, obviously behind the plate, has been dealing with a thumb injury pretty much this entire season. It's been aggravated a few times. He's been back in the lineup these past couple games and seems to be okay, but every time, you know, he's tagging somebody out at the plate or you see that ball kind of go off the glove in a funny way, you kind of wonder if that's going to be re-aggravated again. He was at a point a couple weeks ago he couldn't even grip the bat correctly because of how much that thumb was bothering him. So that's something that's been lingering so far this season. And Gavin Braylon, real nasty situation a couple weeks ago when they were playing their midweek game at the Citadel, and he's trying to get a foul ball right at Citadel's dugout and kind of slides for it, and his cleat kind of catches on the little wall right there outside the dugout. I thought he broke his leg, to be honest with you. I'm glad it wasn't worse than that, but definitely tweaked that knee a little bit. It's been out for a few games, but did make his way back in lineup just the other night when they were taking on Charleston, so it seems to be okay. His catcher's kind of been hit by the injury bug a little bit there.
I listened to Maneri's radio show the other night, the Carolina calls, and he talked about his experiences of playing in Fayetteville. It's a difficult place to play. You know what's amazing to me is since 2019, Arkansas has won 22 of 23 weekend SEC baseball series here. The only team that's won during that time was Vanderbilt to close out the 2022 season. What do you think South Carolina is going to have to do to come into what should be a great environment this weekend and win in a place where a lot of SEC teams just simply have not been able to?
Not allow a ton of runs to start off with and get on the ball pretty quickly. They've been really good at scoring in the middle innings so far. It's been a little bit hit or miss when it comes to scoring early on in the game. In fact, Maneri was asked about this with his media availability yesterday. Would you rather have a good first outing or first inning from a pitching standpoint or score your runs first? And it kind of seemed to lean towards the pitching thing because you don't want to be playing from behind, which I agree with. And again, the weekend starters have had their ups and downs. Again, Stone after the first inning was fine last week, but it's going to be vitally important that he gets out there tonight and doesn't allow a ton of runs, doesn't allow a ton of hits, and can allow your offense to come up there without having themselves in a deep hole in the in the second inning there and going forward. So again, it's a little bit of a balance there. And again, they out hit Oklahoma last weekend. It was just driving guys in and not leaving guys out on the bases that have been the issue that hopefully they can correct. But again, as you said, it's not an easy place to play, and I do worry a little bit. They've not been in a true road environment for an entire series. You mentioned they do the thing with Clemson, where they play one game at Clemson, one game here at South Carolina, then one game at a neutral site at a minor league park. But even with a away game at Clemson, you had a lot of Gamecock fans there on that Friday night. So going to Arkansas, I'm sure there'll be a couple, but probably not a whole lot, making that trip out there this week. And you're truly in enemy territory for three games. And look, Maneri's been there and done that, but some of these younger guys, especially ones that are playing like Kazmar and Scobie and guys like that, I wonder if that could be a challenge for them going into a tough place to play like Arkansas is.
First pitch is this weekend, 6:30 on Friday, 2 o'clock on Saturday, and 2 o'clock on Sunday. And if you're wondering, they aren't moving the game time on Saturday because of the NCAA tournament. You're just going to have to watch both. Arkansas is going to start at 2 o'clock with the basketball game against St. John's going on at the same time. Tyler, we appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
All right. We appreciate you being here, and we appreciate all of you joining us here today on our podcast. Hope we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com, throughout the weekend. Obviously, a lot of news expected with Razorback baseball against South Carolina. Of course, the basketball game in Providence tomorrow against St. John's. Wholehogsports.com. We'll be back with another podcast on Monday. Hope to see you then. Have a great weekend, everybody.